Welcome back to the Electric Podcast. I'm Fred Lambert, your host, and I'm joined by Seth Winchild. How are you doing, Seth?
I'm well.
Awesome. Big week in the EV world this week, and especially in the Tesla world, especially today, and what happened last night with Elon's interview. But we're going to start this week with something a little bit lighter. Well, actually, quite an EV car, probably. It's lighter in terms of tone, but an EV vehicle, the Roadster. Tesla made the Roadster Next Gen car show debut and also European debut at the Grand Basel show that we talked last week. So we talked about Tesla bringing a surprise vehicle, and we were fairly sure that it was going to be the Next Gen Roadster. Sure enough, it was, and they brought the new white one that we saw at the Mountain View. What was it? The shareholder meeting.
Yeah, and that's at the Computer History Museum. Where they've had quite a few events, and there's also a supercharger there.
Yeah, correct. They brought the Tesla Semi. They brought basically all Tesla's vehicles, including this one, which from the look of it, as you can see right now if you're watching on YouTube, it looks like just a design prototype. It's not an actual working prototype that that we see here. And we got the confirmation of that from a source that got a lot closer than those pictures and was actually able to get inside the car, the design prototype at the Grand Basel show. And for sure, it's not a finished interior, but it's a design prototype, so they use that to figure out the inside dimension of the vehicle based on the interior design. So what that did is that it gave us a first look at the dimension of the backseat, the mysterious Roadster backseat that Elon mentioned when they unveiled the vehicle last year, and we never got a look of it. I mean, Seth, sat in it, you got the test ride, and you never saw the backseat.
Yeah, it was all very dark.
All very dark. They didn't highlight it at all. But with this source here, we get to see actually where the back seat is, and in comparison to the fake front seat that they install inside the foam interior. And it looks like decent size, like Elon said, like small adults and kids. That looks about right to me.
Yeah, this would be like an emergency, like you got to take four people somewhere, or you know, three people somewhere, and there's no other way to do it. You could probably squeeze adults in there, or if you have young kids, they're probably going to be fine back there. I don't see a lot of leg room happening. Maybe if you scooch the seat up a little bit, but for all intents and purposes, this is a two-seater.
Yeah, for sure. And it's officially a two-seater too if you get the SpaceX package that Elon has been talking about, where you had Cold Earth Roadster to the Roadster. And supposedly the tanks or the air pump or whatever comes with the package to get those thruster, it takes up the space of your back seat in the Roadster.
So, I mean, that's really happening. So it seems like that isn't a joke. So it's not like a chemical. It's not like a heat or cold. It's just an electric air pump pumping air into tanks. And then, you know, theoretically, when you want to accelerate really fast, because 1.9 seconds 0 to 60 isn't fast enough for you. When you want to go really, really fast, you expend all of that 30,000 psi of pressure backwards, and apparently we learned last night that it can fly.
Yeah, Elon actually did say that before. That it wasn't the first time that he mentioned that, but it was interesting. You're talking about the Joe Rogan interview.
Yeah, I don't want to jump into that because I know that's a black hole.
But, yeah, well, we're gonna talk about it. Actually, we should talk about it right now if we're already in it.
All right.
But specifically referencing that little segment here, what was interesting about that is so Rogan mentioned the specs of the Roadster, like the 1.9. 0 to 60 acceleration, and then Elon responded, "That's the standard version." So Joe Rogan was like, "What's the more advanced version?" And so that wasn't a direct reference to what would be the specs with those cool dirt thrusters, because he's been talking about them for a while, but he never mentioned the actual improvement to, he said it's going to be better at cornering. So it sounds like you could actually get the thrusters from the sides too, not just from the back, which would assume would be the bigger thrust. The only thing he said, he didn't release new numbers. He said that it could actually maybe fly with it. And that's kind of worrying to me, because I was thinking, because if you guys don't know, I think we already announced it, like officially through the referral program, I should get a Roadster. I'm on 100% discount on it. And I was planning on order it, like, of course, fully equipped with the SpaceX package and everything. But if I get the SpaceX package, then I have to try those cooler Roadster. I'm not getting it and not trying it. And I mean, how do you not crash with that? I just don't get it.
Right, because 0 to 100 miles per hour in 4.2 seconds is just not fast enough. You need to get a couple seconds off of that. I honestly don't get it, but I'm just going with this
yeah
idea.
I assume that it would be just like for track on race tracks. It's not like to use on the street or anything, but even then, I mean, it's
rockets to use on a track. I don't know. Okay.
Well, he says rockets, but it's cold air gas thruster.
Yeah, so. Do you remember one of the, when we went to the Hyperloop thing, one of the Hyperloop teams was using air thrusters. I think it was the University of Wisconsin, maybe. And we were kind of like, oh, that's a, you know, interesting way of propelling your vehicle. But
maybe. Yeah, it looks like it was inspired also by SpaceX,
right?
Because SpaceX used them on the, I think, on the second stage of the Falcon rocket to make adjustments. So it's SpaceX developing an expertise in it, and now they're transferring that to Tesla, it looks like, for for this car. Speaking of the Roadster, again, on top of Tesla making the car show debut and the European debut, they released a bunch of new press images this week that I'm showing right now. Very splendid images, really, of the working prototype and the same white one too. So it looks like Tesla is starting to market a little bit the vehicle, like try to get some hype. And the looks of it, like the idea behind bringing it to Green Basel, to me, it sounds a lot like it was just an opportunity to get reservations. I talked to a few people that went there at the event, and they all said that the staff that was there was pretty much there to talk about the vehicle and everything, which is kind of, instead of a regular car show experience, it's more like a museum experience. But they were taking people's information for a reservation on the car. And if you guys know, the reservation on the Roadster start at $50,000, and you can also reserve the full Founder Series for $250,000. That's a full price, but that's also the deposit that you need to put on the car. So it's very valuable for Tesla to do those kinds of events and try to accumulate some reservation at 50,000 to 250,000 is a pop. It adds up pretty quickly.
Isn't the Founder Series a limited production run? Isn't like, 250 or something they're making?
I think it's 1,000.
1,000?
250,000 per car.
Okay.
1,000 car.
Gotcha.
That's my understanding. Yeah. That's about it for the Roadster this week. But we can move on to the first look that we got at the version 9 software update that is coming. Elon updated that to this week. He said that it should be coming in the next week or two to the Early Access Program, which is like a beta tester program of a few hundred or a few thousands Tesla owners. But the actual wide release is planned for the end of the month now. So we were supposed to be early this month. Now it's looking more toward the end of the month.
Which actually means the beginning of next month.
Most likely, yes. Even that's optimistic in my opinion. But this week we got a first look at an early alpha build, thanks to Jason Hughes, the infamous Tesla hacker and tinkerer who brought us a bunch of other new features by basically by looking at early Tesla development builds for the new software updates and also into hardware. It's been a bunch of great discoveries. So a very reliable source. And he got his hands on a at this point, it's almost 2 weeks old alpha build. And what it shows basically is that the biggest change with the version 9 is going to be a new UI interface that's harmonizing the Model 3 interface, the existing one, with the one that's the Model S and X, which is in line with what we reported a few weeks back about Tesla trying to harmonize the interior of the Model S and X with the Model 3 with an upcoming refresh in about a year.
Yeah, that's a long way off. But this definitely looks a lot more like the Model 3 UI.
Yeah, and now they're doing it already with the software, not the actual hardware in the interior of the car. So what it means basically is that your navigation system becomes your screen's background. So the navigation app is sort of always on in the background. And then if you want to use other type of application, the menu is now stuck to the bottom, and you launch them from the bottom, and they sort of pop up as windows inside the navigation background, much like the Model 3. Of course, aside from the fact that the Model 3 has, since it only has a screen and no instrument cluster, the instrument cluster is on the left side of the screen, so you still have the regular instrument cluster in the Model S and X, which removed the need to add the information on that center screen. But yeah, and the navigation got a few updates too. Navigation now has the long-awaited waypoints, so if you're doing a long road trip, you can now have waypoints. Other than that, it's pretty bare. But like we said, it's an alpha build. Tesla is likely going to work a lot on it in the next few weeks for the release. But yeah, it makes a lot of sense in terms of the refresh, I think. In terms of features, it's a disappointing thing, but like I said, give it a few weeks. One thing that Jason found was a drive on nav beta features under all the beta features of the autopilot, like auto steers and summon. From that, he couldn't exactly say what it was. It's just it was in the system that in the build that he got. But a few days later, we managed to find out a little more information about that feature. And what it does exactly, and it's kind of weird, like, so you have to follow me on this. It's basically a first step toward the on-ramp, off-ramp feature that Elon Musk has been promising with the version 9 of the system, which is the first, well, officially Tesla says that it's already rolling out the enhanced autopilot, but it's really the most significant enhanced autopilot features that Tesla is going to roll out first. And it's unable you to basically drive autonomously from the on-ramp to an off-ramp and take exit and interchanges on the highway with the autopilot making its own lane changes instead of you having to activate them. What the drive on navigation the features does, it's like a first step toward that by, if you have a destination on your navigation system, the autopilot knows where you want to go, and therefore it will suggest the lane change. So you don't have to, it's not you making the first step for the lane change. The autopilot suggests it to you. But like it is with auto steer right now, where you have to activate it through your turn signal, you also have to confirm the lane change under the drive on nav feature, at least for the alpha build. That might change once it gets to a wider release. But right now you have to pull the autopilot lever to activate it, at least on the Model S.
So how long until this is ready for, or like, you know, will typical Tesla owners see this functionality?
Well, like Elon said, end of the month, but like you said, that's Elon time, so it might be later.
But this sounds like it's a beta of a upcoming feature. How long until it's like not a beta anymore?
Oh boy, that's a good question, because auto steer is still in beta 2 years in. So
right.
2 years in on the Autopilot 2.0 system. So I mean, there's no telling at this point. That thing could be could be in beta in ages. But Elon also talked about why he called some of the autopilot features beta. It's not necessarily beta, that there was another like internal beta, so that's a public beta, but he does it more as a as a, an incentive for people to be more careful than to be like a true beta feature.
Yeah,
which is sort of a cop out, I think. But
well, on the flip side, when they sue Tesla, they can say it was beta.
Yeah, that's part of it, probably.
Right.
Yeah. So yeah, so we already said that about the timing and the feature. Moving on to Model 3. We had a report earlier this week about the Model 3 that had a lot of people talking. I mean, just on, like almost 600 comments on that article right there. And it was about some of the bad consumer experience right now that Model 3 buyers are having with the sort of repeated delays that are bothering people. Over the last month, I got a lot of reports about that, so I started looking more into it. And I mean, my own experience with Model 3 delays too right now sort of getting me worried. But with a few experience adding up from buyers, I decided to make an article about it because there was especially two cases that I thought was particularly worrying. One with Matt Gribben, who had his Model 3 actually had a delivery date on two occasions, and they were both canceled. And the first time it was canceled, they gave him a reason that there was a problem with the battery pack. And the problem was apparently so severe that you wouldn't get the same car at all anymore. So, okay, that's fine. But then what they told him is that they're not necessarily going to produce him a whole new car. It's just they're going to match him with an existing car that matches his configuration. So they told him they're going to assign him a new car within the same week. Fine. Looks like a good turnover, even though there was a mistake with his car. Was there an issue with his car? But a day before his new delivery date, they called him and they said, oh, sorry, we didn't assign you a new car. There wasn't a new car to assign anything. And since then, he didn't heard anything from Tesla. Doesn't know when a new car is going to production or if he's going to get a new one assigned. So that's a frustrating situation, and especially the radio silence that Tesla customer service goes into with those things. So that's always a very frustrating experience. Even more frustrating was the other experience from Cody A. from Texas. That was this one that was the one that convinced me to do the article, because in Texas, as most of you know, they still have the restriction on Tesla's direct sales model that forces them to basically have to sell the cars through California instead of Texas. And because of that, I'm not sure why, but buyers have to pay the car in full before the delivery. So instead of most other states is where you have to, when you go to take your delivery, that's when you give the check or whatnot, but not in Texas. So what happened is as soon as he got a delivery date, he had to pay the car in full, which he did on July 13 with the delivery date for August 4th. So kind of a long time to have the car paid in full without actually having a delivery, but fine. But what happened next is that the delivery date was pushed on four different occasions, and most of the time there wasn't really a good reason for it, like no reason at all really. So he doesn't know where his car is. His car is paid in full for almost 2 months, for two car payments basically. He didn't have a car and he didn't know why. After we published the article, he ended up getting his delivery. Tesla actually reached out to them and they did the first home delivery in Texas for him. So that's pretty cool.
That was nice.
Yeah, but still like a frustrating experience.
So my neighbor is now on week 4 of, it's going to come this week, don't worry. And it's now the fourth time they've told him that. Yeah. So, and he's like the only one I know that's getting a delivery right now. So it's not, it sounds like it's pretty widespread.
Yeah, it's not just the two that I just mentioned. And what's crazy is that after I posted my article, then I got like 50 emails from people with the same situation. So yeah, it looks like, well, what I also wrote in articles, it's from sources that are aware of the delivery situation for Tesla. They told me that some of the delivery hubs right now are seeing 3 or 4 times the delivery volumes that they have to do in the same times before they get those Model 3 shipments.
Yeah, I mean, you just look at the numbers, like look at the graph of the months, and they're making like double or triple what they've ever made before. And add to that, there's a few problems with it, you know, like typical problems, but it sounds like when they went to 5,000 per month, they might have increased the number of problems a little bit. So add that into a never-before-seen amount of car deliveries, and you got a kind of recipe for a mess, and that's kind of what's happening now. So I don't know what Tesla's going to do. I didn't know they didn't comment publicly on your story, but it sounds like...
No, they did comment on my story.
Did they? Yeah. But, you know, they need to ramp up.
That's what they did. I can read the official comment from Tesla on my report. As the number of cars we're delivering has rapidly multiplied, we are continuing to expand our logistic and scheduling operation to ensure that our customer get their cars as quickly and smoothly as possible. In addition to increasing our transport capacity, we also add new staff on delivery team, and we expect further improvement as we scale. So we already reported on the delivery team last week, and transport apparently is a real issue. I mean, transport is always a big issue. There's always like a shortage of truck drivers and trucks, and a shortage of train, like not trains, but the wagons on the trains. There's mm-hmm. always a shortage of containers and stuff like that. So I can understand that. So it's not just a Tesla problem, but right now they really need to scale the logistic of it. And basically, I did suggest because I know it's growing pains. Like it's clear it's growing pains. So I don't want to hammer Tesla on it too much here. I think it still needs to be highlighted because those are some significant like. Issues that can tarnish the brand, but you could argue that Tesla's growing pains are necessary because Tesla needs to grow at high pace in order to accelerate EV adoption, which is very necessary. So I get that, but I did suggest a possible solution that they should create some sort of special team inside Tesla's customer service to just take over the cases, that the more extreme cases, like those one that we just mentioned, that makes no sense. Those cases looks like, because what all the owners say is that the most frustrating thing is the lack of communication from Tesla. Like something happened with the car, whatever, it can happen with a dozen car a week now that they are making 4,000 to 5,000 a week. So it's not a statistically significant number. But when something happens, you need to have customer service on top of it that reassure customers of what's on. So maybe just a small team that can take over those cases and keep in contact with the customer, telling them what's happening. That make all the difference, I think.
Yeah, and specifically the cases that fall through the holes, those are the ones that the short sellers and all the naysayers pick up on, and you know they find them in the forums and they amplify those. Which makes it look like a even bigger catastrophe than it probably even is.
Yeah, and I mean they have a case for it. Those are bad situations, so it's not like, of course, when the naysayers make it sound like it's the norm, it's not the norm, but it's becoming a big enough issue that I think it needs to be highlighted and fixed. But speaking of the delivery time, we got an update today that Tesla accelerated the delivery timeline for the rear-wheel drive version. And that plays into the current situation with Tesla production, which we're gonna also give you another exclusive on the production number updates like we did last week. By that, I mean, what I'm understanding, the actual delivery timeline, so as you know, for the longest time, Tesla had like 2 or 4 months of basically every version. They tried to accelerate the delivery of the performance version. And now what happens is that the rear-wheel drive is basically within 4 weeks. They said Tesla, you can order a new Model 3 right now, and within 4 weeks, you can get the rear-wheel drive version, which is 2 to 3 times faster than getting a Model S right now. The dual motor without the performance version is 2 to 4 months. Performance version, 2 months. My understanding is that Tesla is still able to more easily mass-produce the rear-wheel drive version than any other version. So that version, what happened is that the options are limited, so you still not have the white interior. You still not have, of course, if you don't get the performance powertrain, you cannot get the performance upgrade package. So it's very, the options are very limited, basically to 18 or 19 inch wheels and the color. That's basically it, other than Autopilot. But Autopilot is a software thing, so it doesn't have nothing to do with manufacturing. So what they do is that they produce those in big batches. So they're not actually like custom made. They make big batches of them based on what they understand is the ordering of different colors. And then, which is also why paint shop is often the bottleneck, because you don't know exactly which color they, in certain times, are going to be more popular than others. But
it seems like there's so few options that they could just run a day of black cars, a day of blue cars, a day of red cars, you know, as far as
apparently that's what they're doing. I'm not sure it's a day, it might be a shift, it might be like a few hours, but apparently that's pretty much what they're doing right now.
Okay.
And what they do is after the car is produced, it's not custom made to one person, but they ship it to a certain place, and then they try to match it to the order of the person. So that's why we're seeing like now a 4 weeks delivery timeline for the rear-wheel drive version. And actually, a bunch of people are reporting that they can get it even sooner than that. Like we heard of people getting in 2 weeks after confirming an order.
So, that's interesting.
Yeah. But in terms of productions, same sources, reliable sources that last week gave us a production update for this week, which is 4,600 cars total, 3,100 Model 3s. So that's a big drop from last week, of course. But we think that's because of the long weekend. So I'm not sure exactly if there was a full day off, but it sounds like it. And maybe like just also people on vacation and stuff. So we're going to keep an eye on, because like we reported last week, it looks like Tesla right now is trending for at least the lower end of the overall production targets, with like being 1,000. Because if they stay to 4,300, which what we was trending last week, they get to that lower end of the production target of 50 to 55,000. But now with 1,200 Huff or so, they need to catch up a little bit in order to stay within their goal. I think they will within the next 3 weeks, but we're gonna have to keep an eye on to make sure.
Yeah, and it's always like it's always good to kind of look at the numbers, because even at 4,000 per week, they're making more EVs than any other company ever made ever. I mean, if you look at like the you know, just look at how many EVs are made overall, and the Model 3 just blows everything up out of the water. And as Elon tweeted this week, Tesla is now the 1, 2, and 3 EV in the U.S.
Yeah,
although his numbers source may have been a little bit.
Yeah, that's based on Inside EV's estimate. What this says is the leading estimates on the market, but I'm more skeptical about that, and I'm even more concerned that Elon would tweet them, because tweeting them make it sound like they are the real delivery numbers, and I think he was just more looking at the comparison with BMW, but I think they were lower than that for last month. But we might have an update on that soon. Tesla Semi, a year into the program, they are still accumulating some new orders, this time from Walmart. Looks like they are getting excited about the Tesla Semi, because it's their second order for the Tesla Semi electric trucks. They announced this week that they are ordered 30 more trucks, up from the 15 that they ordered right after the unveiling event last year. And those trucks were for Walmart Canada. They wanted to use them in Canada. And those 30 ones also going to be used in Canada. Walmart has a pretty significant fleet in Canada. They want it to be 20% electrified by 2022. And Tesla Semi is a big part of that. So that's exciting. We also seen this week that Tesla Semi is still touring around. Last week we saw it in Denver, and it was just spotted today in Salt Lake City. So another 500 miles or so of travel this week, and looks like it was all around the Midwest in the past three to 4 weeks, and now it's going back to California. So they're still pretty much in the test program, and they are visiting all their reservation holders and everything. So should we talk a little bit more about that
Joe
Rogan interview last night? don't know if you guys listened to that. I was
where
I
do you even start?
A few things. I mean, if we start out with the beginning, I don't know if you had the same impression that I had, but at the beginning, Elon sounded completely different. Like, he had a different speech pattern in his voice. He's known for stuttering a little bit, which I think is fine. Like, a bunch of people come in and all that, but I have no problem with it. But
yeah.
Weirdly enough, he almost didn't stutter at all during at least the beginning of the podcast. I think he got more loose during the podcast. But at the really beginning, he had a very weird speech pattern, like a very intentional way of speaking, it looked like.
Yeah, I agree. It seemed very strange, and I wonder if it has to do with him hearing himself, like, you know how we can hear ourselves talk right now.
Yeah, a good point. Yeah,
I wonder if those headphones on made him a little bit more cognizant of the speech. Maybe he was like, oh, you know, like, or maybe you know, he kind of was a little bit more relaxed and not in front of 100,000 people. It's just kind of a room.
Yeah. But I think you got a really good point with the first thing, because now that you say that, I remember Rogan often mentioning that, because some of his guests doesn't want to have the earphones, and he says that makes a big difference. They say they are more locked in, they're more concentrated on what they're saying and everything, and with the conversation. So that might exactly be it, actually. You might be right. I didn't think of that.
Yeah, and I mean, I know you and I sound a lot better when we can hear what we're saying.
Mm-hmm.
So believe it or not, we sound a lot worse.
Especially me. I'm going to use the excuse of English being my second language.
That's a legit excuse. But, you know, like, when you hear yourself talking through the headphones, it's a lot more...
So now people in the comment are all saying weed and alcohol. So weed and alcohol might be a reason behind that. I don't agree with it at all, because it was right from the get-go of the interview. So it's not like it didn't build up on interview. Actually, it did change, and it got back to his more usual speech pattern, I think, like halfway through it or so, because it was still like 2.5-3 hours interview, something like that, like a usual Joe Rogan podcast. And as for the controversy behind the weed and alcohol, first of all, there wasn't much of a controversy behind the alcohol. The whiskey, like, everyone is okay with that. You got two glasses of whiskey. But as soon as he took a hit of that blunt, like, the whole Twitter sphere went crazy. Then the media picked it up and everything. I mean, I think it's just gossipy, just like TMZ-like stuff. Because if you have to worry about Elon Musk, a state of mind being changed by a substance, then I'm pretty sure that those two glasses of whiskey had a bigger difference on him than that little hit of a blunt, for sure. And if anything, like, you know, in the past few weeks, there's been a bunch of rumors that Elon was actually a pothead because of, I forget her name, but the rapper girl that Elon's ex invited to his house or whatnot. She leaked a bunch of things in the media. Well, she leaked, but it was basically a bunch of rumors that she started, including one that he was a big pothead, and then that's why the take private deal was set at a share price of $4.20. And if anything, that
I don't think that's lost on him. I think Elon knows what $4.20 means. Like, I don't think
He might, but that doesn't mean he's a pothead. I mean, plenty of people are not potheads.
And he said in the interview, like, it makes him unproductive, which, like, anybody who smokes pot knows that, like, you're not very productive unless you're like a musician. Hey,
I might have to disagree with that though. But I'm thinking I'm pretty productive, and then, you know, I'm a big proponent of marijuana. But I mean, what I mean by that what it proved is not a part of it, is just his reaction to Joe Rogan lighting up the blunt. It was right away like, is it a marijuana cigarette? Almost like, maybe he didn't say it like that.
Also, but the way he puffed, that was not a puff of a
yeah.
Like,
he didn't
a hardcore smoke.
Inhale the
yeah. Did he even inhale? I never saw any. He didn't blow smoke out. It reminds me of the way my significant other used to pretend to smoke and wasn't really smoking
to look cool. Yeah,
long time ago. So, you know, some other person that I'm no longer, whatever.
Yeah, Helesia Banks. That was the
Cedric
Weinstein. Reminded us of
the name. So, do we think that any of that was true? Because she went on some crazy stuff.
I think a lot of it is. We didn't report any of it because the first thing I look at her background, and I mean I couldn't take her as a serious source at all. Like she sounds completely crazy. I mean that's just my opinion. I'm not I don't want to often her of her fan, but
that's liable.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure she would agree with someone calling her crazy too. So it's not like a big leap or anything. But moving on from the actual controversy around the substance taking and the actual content, moving on to the actual content of the interview, because if you're following Elon Musk and his project pretty closely, there wasn't much of anything new in the interview. We did report on a quick mention that of sorts of a he hinted at a potential new product of a Tesla smart home with a more efficient air conditioning system that could be added to Tesla's energy products when they install a new power wall and a new solar power system.
Right,
in
one
house.
That knows when you're going to be home and only cools the rooms that you're going to be in because cooling is a very high energy process.
Yeah, so something that could work with your car, so it knows when your cars arrive at the home or is about to arrive at the home, so they can pre-cool and everything, pre-cooled per room, so a more intelligent air conditioning system. And we know that Tesla has some expertise now with air conditioning, with the new HVAC system that they developed for the Model 3, and they're starting to build an expertise in that, so maybe they could leverage that for an actual home air conditioning system instead of just automotive stuff. But other than that, I think what was noteworthy was also basically the fact that he convinced Joe Rogan to buy one. Actually, Joe Rogan said he was going to buy a Model S, a P100D, after Elon's suggestion. And when he says that, Joe Rogan normally he buys a stuff. A lot of people have convinced him to buy some stuff live on the show, and he did follow through. So I do believe he's going to do it through here. And what's noteworthy with that, other than the fact that Joe Rogan is a very influential person that could help Tesla sales to a certain degree, is that the guy is a big gearhead, and I could even say petrol head, really. He's a big car enthusiast, basically. He's a big fan also of older cars. He's a big fan of retro modes, too. So that's what's interesting, too, because even though he appreciates the old cars, he has a 1965 Corvette, he also embraced technology. He's a big technophile. He's very forward thinking, and his 1965 Corvette, it's a retro mode. So he actually had the all new suspension, all new frame, all new everything, basically to make the car work like a modern car with the look of a 1965. So it's not like he's a purist, really. But even with all that, he's been very dismissive of electric vehicles in the past. And I'm a big fan of Joe Rogan. I listen to his podcast all the time. And that's something that I just noticed, because some of his regular friends that go on his podcast are Tesla owners, Brian Callen and Tom Papa. They are owners. They talked a little bit about the cars, but they're very casual owners, like hardcore fans like us. So it's not they're not necessarily someone that we could defend the actual facts behind the information. So they could be themselves a little bit misinformed, and that could transfer the misinformation to Rogan, who often said that you cannot do road trips with an electric car, doesn't have enough range, the charging takes a very long time, doesn't understand really the supercharger, how fast it can be, and you use it basically to when you go stop to eat anyway, stop to do something else anyway. So
yeah, I was actually surprised he didn't mention anything about the supercharger V2 or 3 or whatever it is, the next one coming up. Tesla's been kind of quiet on that. That was supposed to be at the end of the year, right?
Yeah, it was supposed to be the end of the summer. I think now they changed it to the end of the year.
Yeah.
But, he didn't mention, he didn't sell the product to him as much, but I did like the angle that he took, because when he actually said, okay, I'm gonna order one, which one should I order? Order the P100D Model S and everything. When he did say that, he mentioned something, and that's something that come up a lot, especially more recently with Porsche bringing the first electric all-electric vehicle to market. and saying that it's a real Porsche, it has a soul, implying that current electric vehicles don't have a soul. And Rogan's point is that when he's in a Porsche 911, and I think it's a older Porsche 911 that he has, so one that's more mechanical. And he said that he felt closer to the road, as a more direct connection to the road. And he used the car to hype himself up, like it's a whole driving experience that he cherished behind the car. And he used it to hype himself up when he does a comedy set at the Comedy Store. And Elon's suggestion is that you could do the same, like you can have the same soul, the same experience, the same fun with a car, with a Model S P100D, which he describes so that the perfect fun machine. That's something that he said in the past. I mean, of course, he's preaching to the choir here.
Yeah, and he did hammer home on a few occasions that the Tesla is built to be the funnest car in the world.
Mm-hmm,
like
mm-hmm.
That was kind of like a new, I don't know if they'll go in that direction or they even think about these things, but like it definitely felt like a brand direction, like that they had been thinking about or kind of coalescing around. Because, you know, even though that Tesla doesn't do any advertising in a traditional sense, you do kind of have to have like a clear brand direction. And I think, you know, those kind of ideas are really, really, you know, important.
Yeah, I think that's not the first time that he tried to push toward that way. But I think you're right. I think it's sort of had up into a real strategy here. But like the way he then tried to sell the fun, though, I wasn't too big on that. Like he did mention the acceleration a little bit and everything, but when he talked about the fun thing, he started talking about the Easter eggs and the Model X being able to dance to do the double dance with the Falcon wings and the Atari games that they are going to be introducing in version 9. I mean, those are fun and everything, but I mean, I don't think that's what people think about when they talk about the car being fun, really.
Yeah, you do that one time, and like nobody's doing that, the Christmas dance every day.
Yeah, no. So a more emphasis on the driving experience and everything. It did touch a little bit to safety, so which I think is always a good thing to talk about. The Model S and basically all of Tesla's vehicles are very safe, and it's something that Tesla needs, I think, to bring it forward more, I think. And Rogan was actually very impressed by his expectation of the advantage that an electric motor has over a gas motor, gas engine in terms of traction control and the response of the traction. I think that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, the accuracy is what he was saying, something like within an inch of hitting ice, the car knows it's on the ice and can adjust accordingly. I think the question came up when Rogan was saying, well, you know, what if you start sliding sideways? And Elon's answer was you would never start sliding sideways because the car, as soon as you went an inch, you know, off track, it would adjust, which, you know, I think that's probably where it's going to end up. I don't know if it's exactly there yet.
Yeah, he basically said that it wouldn't already, but there's certainly potential for that to happen for sure. Should we move on from Tesla?
Sure.
Moving on from Tesla, Ford, we did talk about the upcoming Mustang-inspired first electric, well, the first fully electric Ford vehicle built from the ground up to be electric, but now they confirmed that it was going to be Mustang-inspired. That was last week. Now what they did this week is they released the first teaser image, which Ford CEO called the money shot. So that's the money shot right now, which is basically a drawing, a design drawing of the rear of the vehicle. Nothing really impressive. So I think he's hyping it a little bit too much with his money shot. But they did release a whole report about... from one of the guys on the Team Edison at Ford. So Ford started a Team Edison last year to develop those electric vehicles, which is, some say it's a swipe at Tesla because of the rivalry between Nikola Tesla and Edison. What's the Edison's first name?
Thomas Edison.
Thomas Edison, right. Other than that, I have to say they didn't really release much information other than the image. They did say that they reiterated the fact that they were aiming for 300 miles of range, aiming for a 2020 release. So it's still not like right at the door. We're gonna have to wait a little bit for Ford's car.
And you know, like I'm relatively new to the mainstream automobile industry, and I'd never really realized how they like leak out. Like, not leak out, but they, like, give you, like, just a little bit every week. I mean, you know, Volkswagen and Audi are probably the best or the worst at this, where every week you get a little bit more, and, like, you know, it's kind of interesting, and you kind of, you know, we kind of want to publish a lot of these things. Yeah. But it's just like almost slow water torture, because just show me this stupid car and put it on the stupid road and let me drive it. You know, like I don't need this, like a little bit, but I know that's going to happen with Ford here. We're going to get like 20 more teaser shots.
Oh, for sure. In the next 2 years. Yeah.
Yeah. We have 2 years to reveal a full car is basically what we're getting.
Yeah, I cannot remember a time where, like, we were surprised by a car. Like, you cannot be, right? It's not like they can release a car. It's like, well, Tesla
more. Model 3 was a little bit. It was surprising in that we had already seen it, but we didn't know we had already seen it.
Yeah, well, I was more thinking like the Roadster, like no one saw it coming. I was going to reveal it during the Tesla Semi, but it's also 2 years from production. So it's not like I'm talking about a car that's coming like right away.
You can't. There's just too big a supply chain. Although with the Roadster, there was the thing in the app saying you're going to get a Roadster too.
Like, oh, yeah. We knew that, but
we didn't know what
it was. It was never clear when it was going to come, when we're going to see it, right, and everything. And then they released it. But they didn't tease it otherwise. Like, they didn't release any teaser. Anyway. Aside from Ford, we've seen pretty other stuff. More. Oh, what happened here?
Gotta refresh that one.
That's Mercedes. Mercedes. So what Mercedes unveiled the EQC production version this week. So we've seen that car since 2015 for the concept version. But over the last 2 years, we've seen like prototypes, camouflage prototypes. Now we're seeing the real thing, and we get all the specs and everything. So that's the car, a lot more conventional than the concept.
Is it neat, or is that kind of boring?
It is conventional. It's right, conventional. You want to use the term boring? You can. It's your choice. I like it. It's not that bad. I don't like the plastic-looking grill, or if it looks fake, but there's some her intakes, but it looks mostly fake, really. But the actual shape of the car, I think it's like, if you're a fan of Mercedes SUVs, and I think that should be the goal, like where we want Mercedes to get market share for the EQC. We want it to, like, instead of selling gas powered SUVs and very gas costing ones, they can get those ones instead. And right. I think it's an easier transition for the people that would have bought the gas-powered SUVs first. But in terms of the specs, that's where it's a little bit disappointing, because they confirm a battery pack of 80 kilowatt hours. And they're further range, like with that, because 80 kilowatt hours on that size of SUV, which is, like we said, it's more like conventional form factor, not really that aerodynamic. We don't expect that big of a range. They said 250 kilometers, but then they use NEDC standard, which no one uses anymore. Everybody is supposed to switch to WLTP, the world standard, but at least the European automaker. In the US, we're still using the EPA, which I think is more accurate in terms of real-world range than those two. But the NEDC is the worst one by far. They did communicate with a U.S. press release that it's going to be 200 miles instead of 280. So, like, that would be based on an EPA. Then they retracted that because 200 miles is a bit low. Then they said 240 miles.
Similar to the Tesla 75D-ish?
Yeah, it is.
The Model X 75D?
Yeah, and the Model X is a little bit bigger than that, but
more aerodynamic,
smarter battery pack, but much more efficient in terms of aerodynamic performance. They said that the charging capacity is going to be 110 kilowatts. So that's it. Like the 80 kilowatt hour battery pack, 110 kilowatts charging capacity. That's the two main features. In my opinion, you have two electric motors, two with the 200 kilowatts output. That's about 400 horsepower. And
so basically, this is like a very low end Tesla. With
in terms of specs,
yeah.
Yes. And it's coming in 2019.
Right. And this is like, you know, Tesla's, this is what's already on the road right now.
There's nothing revolutionary, not even close.
Except it's a Mercedes.
There's not even anything like incremental improvement on it, really.
Right.
It's all things that are on the market today.
Right, the e-tron and the Porsche, at least they charge faster, right?
Yeah. So that, like, most people are trying to release like something new. I'm not saying that Tesla like is unbeatable and everything. I'm saying that that's not it. That's not something that's going to push the market forward. Unfortunately, it's Mercedes-Benz SUV that happens to be all electric and have performance similar to what you'll find in a base version Model X today. That said, you have to understand why we're seeing this right now. Because we're seeing this right now, but it's not coming until next year. Why I think there was such a... I think it's an early reveal for a production version. And why it's an early reveal is because we learned this week that that's not what I wanted to do.
You talking Audi or...?
Yeah, Audi started production of their own electric SUV. So that doesn't work. Sorry about that. Come back here.
The e-tron Quattro.
The e-tron Quattro, which is their own electric SUV, and it started production this week. They announced it, but they're only going to reveal the production version. So, like you see here, they didn't even reveal the car. The production version is going to be unveiled in 2 weeks, well, a bit less than 2 weeks. Not this weekend, next weekend, not next Monday, the other Monday.
Who's going to be on hand to see it?
Myself. I should be there next Monday. Not this Monday, not the next Monday, the normal one for that, the 17th. And to me, it feels like Mercedes wanted people to know, hey, we also have an electric SUV coming, and they unveiled that even though it's not ready for production. They started production, but they planned the unveiling later. From the specs, because even though we haven't seen the production car, we learned a lot about the specs already, and it looks more promising than the Mercedes, really. Especially the fast charging, 150 kilowatts. So it would, that's an incremental improvement, at least. It's not Porsche level, but it's the first, it looks like it's going to be the first production car with a faster fast charging than Tesla. So, I mean, that's something to be celebrated, I think.
Yep.
A little more power, 220 kilowatts. A bigger battery pack, 95 kilowatt hour.
Yeah, so I actually saw one of these at the Formula E event. It is much bigger than the Jaguar I-Pace.
Looks more like an SUV, too. Like,
yeah.
I-Pace is, we've been talking about it as an SUV, but
it's kind of a car with big wheels.
Yeah, and they said they're looking, well, we're going to know that for sure in 2 weeks, but they're talking about 250 miles on that, which sounds a lot more realistic on a 95 kilowatt backpack.
Yep.
So, and it's probably won't be as aerodynamic. No, it for sure won't be as aerodynamic because the Model X, they already announced that, I think. But it's going to look more like a traditional SUV. The only thing I should mention, though, as a comparison with the Mercedes that I didn't, is that... depends all on the price, too. We don't know for sure the Audi price yet. They only announced it in Germany. They said 80,000 euros, but that includes the taxes there. So maybe closer like to 70-something, 60, high 60,000s, low 70,000s. So basically closer to 80,000 US before taxes here. So that's put in the same range of a base Model X, but it's a smaller vehicle, too. Mercedes with the lower specs, I mean, the lower specs could be just fine if the price is lower. It's more like in the 50,000-60,000 range, but I somehow I really doubt that.
Especially
with what they did this week with trying like to steal a spotlight from Audi and everything. So I'd be very surprised if it comes out anything less than like 75K. I mean, even if it's 70K, it's not that bad, I think.
But yeah, and like you said before, we're really hoping this steals market share away from Mercedes and their other vehicles. Their vehicles get horrible gas mileage. So any Mercedes gas powered vehicle that's taken off the road is good news.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's about it for us this week. Unless you had something else to add, an article that we didn't mention.
No, but we are sending out shirts and sweatshirts. So make sure patreon.com/electrek. If you've been supporting us for 6 months, make sure you give us your size and your address so that we can get those out. People who have been supporting us at $10 for 6 months will get the sweatshirt. So I think we have small, medium, large, extra large. Maybe one XXL, and then the shirts, I think they're just normal t-shirt sizes. So we're going to try to get those out in the next week or so.
Yes. For those people that have been supporting us for the last 6 months, and then moving on, we're going to have new stuff relatively soon. Like we said, we have a bunch of stuff coming out for the next few weeks. I'm going to be at the Audi in 2 weeks. But we also have a bunch of other stuff with GM drives for the new Bolt. Well, the new Bolt, like the new model year.
Volt
and Bolt.
Yeah.
I think it's both Volt and Bolt, right? The new.
I don't know. I only saw the Bolt part, but I think maybe they'll probably have both on hand. And that's going to be in Vermont and Burlington, which is a really nice area. Also, we have the BMW iNext Lufthansa cargo plane coming tomorrow. Sorry, not tomorrow, Monday. So we'll be there. I'll be there. And we'll probably have no pictures and a bunch of, you know, press images that they allow us to put up.
Yeah, so. But if you go to on Electrek too, you could actually see the car already. We tweaked the teaser that they released, which looked like it wasn't revealing a lot, but when I tweaked the pictures, changed the contrast a little bit, the exposure, and took a very good freeze frame on it, you can basically see the whole car. It's going to be like a crossover, sort of a maybe a Model Y competitor, something like that. Looks cool, though. We'll see.
Yep.
That's about it for this week, so thanks a lot for listening. Thanks a lot for subscribing. We're going to see you same time next week.
Oh, and one more thing. We're going to be in Interbike next week, or you know, whatever.
Not this weekend, the other one.
Yeah, the weekend after next weekend in Reno, and hopefully we'll do a Gigafactory tour or something. And also, it's Drive Electric Week. I'm going to be in Pleasantville, New York, starting tomorrow. Go to Drive Electric, you know, Google Drive Electric Week. Make sure you can find your local Drive Electric thing and show up and be a good sport and.
Yeah, you get to drive, test out a bunch of EVs there, and you get to talk to a lot of very knowledgeable owners, EV evangelists, as we call them here.
Yep.
All right, that's it, everyone. Thanks a lot for listening. See you next time.